Hey guys, John here from FlightMikeAlpha.com. Welcome back to Task B of the CFI PTS. So we are now in the CFI PTS Area of Operation 1, Fundamentals of Instruction, FOI, and we are in Task B now, titled The Learning Process. Now, the learning process, Task B, has 13 different parts. These parts are learning theory, perceptions and insight, acquiring knowledge, the laws of learning, domains of learning, characteristics of learning, acquiring skill and knowledge, types of practice, scenario-based training, errors, memory and forgetting, retention of learning, and number 13, transfer of learning. So item one in the learning process, task B, is going to be learning theory. Now, the reference material for all of task B, and actually the entire area of operation one, all of the fundamentals of instruction, is FAA 8083-9. That is the flight instructor's handbook. So all of this information can be explained more thoroughly. You can see the FAA's main words that they use to describe these things in the flight instructor's handbook. We're just trying to make it a little more simple than that for you. So learning theory, how do I explain this? Well, learning theory is how people acquire knowledge, skills, and attitudes, okay? So that is what learning theory ultimately is. It's broken down into two main theories, behaviorism theory or cognitive theory. Now, behaviorism really tells us that the things in the animal kingdom, right? People, animals, all that stuff, change their behavior as a response to external stimuli, okay? So behaviorism is this older theory. It's kind of the carrot and stick approach would be the way they explain it. So as a response to stimuli, carrot and stick, you know, risk versus reward, whatever you want to say, there's a carrot, there's a stick, and you're going to chase the carrot. You're responding to that stimuli, and that's going to change your behavior, okay? Now with this, positive reinforcement is key. At some point, that carrot that's on the stick that's being held out in front of you needs to get a little closer to you so you get some positive reinforcement there. That's behaviorism. Now, the other theory, cognitive theory, tells us, oh no, it's more of a mental thing where people perceive and problem solve and decision make and intellectual activities, really a deeper level of thinking, and that's how people learn, is really by thinking about things. So two different schools of thought, they're both correct, they both apply to flight training, behaviorism and cognitive theory. Behaviorism is responses to stimuli, positive reinforcement is key, cognitive theory is the mental events, knowing, perceiving, problem solving, decision making, awareness and intellectual activities. Now, all this feeds into HOTS. HOTS is higher order thinking skills. What are higher order thinking skills? It's what the FAA has identified as the main driving force behind aeronautical decision making, ADM. So what does that really mean? What does all that really mean? Okay, well, for aeronautical decision making, these critical decisions we're making in regards to safe aircraft operation, that is a higher order thinking skills. And it's these higher order thinking skills we're trying to train our students for. We're trying to convey our experience to them so that they can make decisions at a higher level of thinking, and they can process problems like looking out the window and looking at a dark cloud with a little bit of wind, with the sun over here and the moon over there, and they can look at this picture that we look at as experienced commercial pilots working on our CFI or people with 250 hours, and we can look outside the window and make a judgment about the weather a brand new private pilot can't, and we're trying to transfer our level of knowledge to them in regards to just all the different experience. It's hard to transfer 250 hours of experience. It's one thing to transfer an idea or some words. It's a whole other thing to transfer hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of flight experience to someone else. So that is a higher order thinking skill. That's what we're trying to give them, is these skills to think at a high level to make good aeronautical decision-making decisions. So HOTS and ADM go together. Higher order thinking skills, aeronautical decision-making. How do we teach ADM, how do we teach higher order thinking skills? Well, scenario-based training is best because we can use those scenarios to really hone in those higher order thinking skills and really create these problem-solving scenarios, or give them an opportunity to come up with these possible solutions to different problems, talk about the different solutions they're thinking of and how some might be good or some are better, or some are worse. They need to judge the appropriateness of the decision and finally, reflecting on that whole mental process used in solving that problem, come up with an answer of what they're going to do to fly the aircraft. So HOTS, ADM, SBT, scenario-based training all go together here. Ultimately, learning theory, behaviorism, or cognitive theory, the higher order thinking skills are those skills that feed into ADM, And the best way to teach those skills is going to be scenario-based training. That's what you need to know here. That's what you need to be able to explain to the examiner on your check ride. Now, number two on our list in the learning process, all right, that's going to be perceptions and insight. Perceptions and insight is the second topic within Task B, the learning process of the CFI PTS. So perceptions and insight, what are the differences between a perception and an insight? Well, let me give it to you this way. Perceptions are equal insights, all right? So add perceptions together, one perception plus two perception equals an insight, all right? Another way to describe this would be perceptions are the inputs in the equation and insights are the outputs. So X plus Y equals Z and Z is your insight. The perceptions are X and Y. So when you add a couple perceptions together, you can make insights. Now, how do we get perceptions in the first place? These are things we perceive, all right? They're going to come through our five senses. So you have your touch, taste, your smelling, your seeing, your hearing, all of those five senses absorb the world around you. That's how you perceive things. And that's going to create insights when you add multiple perceptions together. Now, the funny thing is we can teach somebody, we can give somebody the same inputs into the equation, right? We can take them up and we can do XYZ lesson plan with them, but the result will differ for each individual. And we often say, oh, well, some people catch on quicker than others or more quickly. Well, really what you're saying is we give them the same perceptions, but the insights are different. You know, so the inputs are the same. We use the same syllabus with everyone, but some people are 40-hour pilots. Some people are 80-hour pilots. The insights come out that are different. And why is that? Is that's because the perceptions you're giving people are not the same, actually. So what I mean by that is people perceive things differently. All right. So this could be factors that affect perception we want to keep in mind. Physical organisms, all right? So how people see, hear, and feel and respond differently. Some people have terrible eyesight. Some people have terrible hearing. Some people, you know, feel and do things differently. Their mind runs at different speeds. So the physical organism, how they perceive the world around them changes, especially you'll see this with very old students. You know, things run a little slower. Their hearing isn't quite as good. Their eyesight may not be as good. Goals and values also affect perception. So we have the physical organism, the physical person affecting the perception, you know, how their overall body is taking in those five senses. And then there is goals and values. So perceptions are influenced by beliefs, values, and past experiences. All right. People's own, you know, personal values and beliefs will affect the way they respond to what you say and what you do and how they remember these things and how they store them in their mind. Self-concept is also a big factor that affects perceptions. People need to have a favorable self-image and that will give them a better reception to learning overall, okay? So if they see themselves in a nice light, they'll be more receptive to learning because, well, they're confident. If someone's not confident, if they see themselves in a negative light, negative self-image, it's going to inhibit them from experiencing new things. It's going to make them much more defensive because they're trying to bring themselves up. So if they already feel like they're having a bad day or they're just not successful or they drive a crummy car or whatever it might be, or, you know, they've got five ex-wives, if they see themselves in a negative light, then they're going to be more defensive throughout the whole learning process. It's going to affect how they perceive the world around them and the insights will be different. The final product will be different. Now, if that same guy with five ex-wives and a crummy car and all this stuff sees himself really favorably, well, that's great. You know, he should see himself favorably. He needs to believe in himself and that will help him through the learning process of becoming a pilot. You know, there's obviously a fine line between confidence and cockiness, but you have to be confident. If you're not confident, the whole learning process is going to hurt. And what's being hurt is the way that you're perceiving the world around you. It's changing the insights you're going to be able to make from all those different perceptions. So far we've got factors that affect our perceptions, the physical organism, how people are actually seeing, hearing, touching, feeling, all that. And then we have goals and values, people's individual goals and values, their past experiences affect their perceptions, the self-concept, how they see themselves, either favorably or negatively, and then time and opportunity, right? So we need this a good amount of length and frequency of training. We obviously have some students that show up once a week and some students that show up, you know, once a month. And that is going to affect how they perceive things and how they're able to store those perceptions to combine them together to make more insights. So proper sequence, length and frequency of training and the overall syllabus we're using will affect the time and opportunity aspect of the perceptions coming in. So time and opportunity is another factor that affects perceptions, and that is making sure there's enough frequency in the training, a good syllabus, a good lesson length, all those sorts of things. Now, the last one we want to talk about is element of threat, all right? Element of threat basically tells us that if they don't feel safe, that's going to narrow the perceptual field, all right? So it's like tunnel vision, all right? They're going to focus on the fear rather than learning. You tell them, hey, it's your lucky day. It's lesson three. Today, we're going to go out and do some slow flight install. It's going to be a great time. And they immediately, you hand them a lesson plan, and they see slow flight, they see stalls, and they see landings, and their eyes just tunnel vision on the stalls. And they won't learn anything about really anything that's on that lesson plan, but certainly not the slow flight and certainly not the landings. They're going to be hyper-focused on the threat. All right, people will focus on the threat. And if you've ever been in a threatening situation, you may realize that you start losing some of your peripheral vision. You get tunnel vision. You'll hear about, you know, police officers in a gunfight, how they only focus on the firearm that's aimed at them, right? So you hear about this all the time, tunnel vision happening. Same thing happens to maybe a lesser degree in flight training when people feel threatened and scared, either in the airplane or on the ground, looking forward to something. So the element of threat is certainly going to affect the perception. Some people don't see stalls as a threat. Some people do. It's going to affect the way they perceive the entire lesson, and the ultimate output, the insights they gain from that lesson, will differ. So we're trying to realize what the factors that affect perceptions are, because we're ultimately looking to give them good inputs. We have a great input, right? We all have a nice syllabus to use with our students. And if we can give them the same input, we should get the same output. We should get a nice 40 or 50 hour private pilot that is safe and ready to learn, ready to fly, all of that. But we know that if you don't, you know, especially in Part 61 training, you just get very mixed results. And that's because all these things, all these different factors that go into affecting people's perceptions, how people are actually hearing you as an instructor, is changing the output, changing the insight. All right. Perceptions combine together to make insights. Now, the definition of insight from the FAA is a grouping of perceptions into meaningful wholes. So perceptions plus perceptions equal insight. Grouping of perceptions into meaningful wholes is insight. Now, what can we do as flight instructors to foster insights? What can we do to foster them adding together perceptions to create more insights? Well, we want to keep students constantly receptive to new experiences and relate each piece to the total pattern of the task being learned. So we want to relate each piece of the puzzle we present. So we have maybe 28 lessons to teach a 40 hours of flight training to a private pilot. We want to take all those different pieces of the puzzle, airspace and aerodynamics and the four forces and all these different things, and relate them interconnected to help them foster more perceptions. The more we can relate information to other pieces of information, the more we will help foster insights. And remember, insights are the end result. Without insights, you got nothing. You just have rote memorization. Those are the kind of the perceptions. That's more at the rote level. And insights are really what helps me move on to the understanding, application, and correlation level of learning. All right, so that is perceptions and insights. If you forget everything I just said, remember, perception plus perception equals insight. That's all I really want you to know there. Now, number three on our list, acquiring knowledge. Number three on the list of task B, the learning process, is acquiring knowledge. And of course, acquiring knowledge is part of the learning process, right? That's why it's here in task B. So what do we want to know about knowledge? Well, the person has to be aware of information and have the ability to articulate. That is what knowledge really is. So we have a few different parts here to acquiring knowledge: memorization, understanding, application, and concept learning. All right, now what is memorization? Well, that's going to be the mental process undertaken in order to store in the person's memory for later recall. That's basically just a fancy definition for somebody stored the information in their head, all right? They memorized it. Now, what about understanding? Understanding is the ability to notice similarities and make associations between the facts and procedural steps learned. This is kind of where you're getting from, hey, perception plus perception equals insight. You're grouping things together, right? And we said insight was grouping of perceptions into meaningful wholes. So at the understanding level, we were starting to group these things together. Understanding, the ability to notice similarities and make associations between the facts and procedural steps learned. Now, application is the next part of acquiring knowledge. And application means putting the knowledge to use. You know, if you know some stuff, but you never use it, well, you might as well not know it. Kind of a waste of time, right? You got to put that knowledge to use, what you know. That's the application part. And lastly, here we have concept learning, all right? Concept learning is grouping information or facts into generalized concepts. Schema is the cognitive framework that helps people organize and interpret information, all right? So schema falls under that concept learning category. Concept learning is grouping information or facts into generalized concepts, and schema is the cognitive framework that helps people organize and interpret information, okay? That's overall acquiring knowledge, memorization, understanding, application, and concept learning, grouping those generalized concepts and facts together. Now, number four on our list is the laws of learning, all right? That is REAPER, okay? Now, we use the acronym REAPER, sounds kind of grim, right? Ha ha ha, but it's not. It's really actually kind of cool. It's REEPIR. That is number four, laws of learning, number four in the learning process task B, all right? So, the first law of learning are readiness. Basic needs must be satisfied. There must be motivation and there has to be teachable moments, all right? So the person needs to be ready to learn. Obviously, the student must be ready to learn. And what have we already talked about being ready? Well, Maslow's hierarchy talks about being ready, right? The very bottom of the pyramid, they have to have the basic needs satisfied, okay? They got to have food, water, sleep, all that stuff. Motivation. Okay, they need to be motivated to do this. They can't just be one of those kids that shows up because their parents are sending them to flight training because their parent wants them to be a pilot. They need to have motivation to actually get this done and believe that the lesson they're working on and the whole process of becoming a pilot is worth it for them. And then there needs to be teachable moments. Okay, so you need to find those teachable moments when it's good to speak up and teach something to a student and when maybe it's not. All right, you know, they just did a touch and go, they botched something on the landing rollout, they take off, it's not a teachable moment, 5 feet up above the ground or even 100 feet above the ground as they're climbing away from the ground. They're focusing on too many other things, all right? That's not a teachable moment. You need to find when those good teachable moments are, when the person is ready to learn. Now, next on the list is effect, all right? Effect is learning is strengthened when accompanied by a pleasant or satisfying feeling. Think about talking to a student on downwind, base, and final, and teaching them something about being on downwind, base, final, and talking to them as they're coming down final about watching the Pappy lights, and talking to them about how they need a flare and use the rudder to align the nose with the extended center line of the runway, so aligning the longitudinal axis of the airplane with the runway. You're talking about all these different things, and imagine you talk to them about all those things, they try their very best to do what you're saying, and the airplane touches down ever so smoothly, rolls out nice. Well, a nice, pleasant, satisfying feeling, right, to all that learning. So learning is strengthened when accompanied by a pleasant or satisfying feeling. So they have a nice landing, then that goes really well. Maybe you're debriefing a student. You want to give them a little bit of praise while you're debriefing them and critiquing them so that they have a pleasant feeling over the whole experience. If you just get out of the airplane and they did 5 things great and 5 things terrible, and you talk about the 5 terrible things and then send them home and say, see you next week for your next flight lesson, well, you're not really giving them a very nice, satisfying, or pleasant feeling, and learning is going to be hurt. It's not going to strengthen the learning. They may start to forget some stuff, and they may forget some of the things they did well because you never mentioned them. So effect means learning is strengthened when accompanied by a pleasant or satisfying feeling. You don't want them to feel bad about the overall learning process, the overall flight training process. Now, exercise is the next thing on the list. Exercise, really simple. It means practice strengthens the learning connection. Disuse weakens it, and application is ultimately what you want to do. You want to apply what you learn. Exercise just simply means you do it more, you'll learn it better, all right? So one of the laws of learning is you got to get out there and practice this stuff so it sticks. That's what exercise really means. You need to apply it. If you don't use it, it'll weaken it, and practice strengthens the learning connection. Now, primacy is the next thing on the list, and primacy is probably the most important law of learning, in my opinion at least. Primacy tells us that what is learned first is learned best. So what they're saying here is if you tell somebody who knows nothing about addition that 2 + 2 = 5, they just memorize that 2 + 2 = 5, and then you teach them how addition works and how to take your fingers and add them together to come up with sums, 3 + 5 = 8 and so on. And they do that, even though they now understand the overall principle of addition and they can solve all these different arithmetics, they will always forever have a hard time getting past 2 + 2 = 4 and not equaling 5, because the first thing they learned was 2 + 2 = 5. So you got to be super careful with what you say in front of students, super careful with the way you teach things, make sure you do it right the first time, because whatever you teach them the first time will stick with them forever. If you tell them that, hey, you know, to be current for carrying passengers, you need to do your night takeoffs and landings after civil twilight, they will have that stuck in their mind for their private an instrument in commercial pilot check ride, and it'll be really hard for them to get through their head that they need to do those takeoffs and landings at night, 1 hour after sunset or 1 hour before sunrise. Really hard for them to switch those things around in their mind once they've learned a different way. Primacy, what is learned first is learned best. The FAA says, primacy creates a strong, almost unshakable impression. Thus, an instructor must teach correctly the first time, and the student must learn correctly the first time. That's a really interesting point there too, okay? You could teach them correctly the first time, but if they hear you wrong, if they're perceiving you wrong because they have some sort of barrier, remember all those different factors that affect perceptions, okay? If they're perceiving things incorrectly and they're learning incorrectly the first time, it's just as bad as you teaching them incorrectly the first time. So what is learned first is learned best. It sticks with them. Make sure you're teaching it right. Make sure they're learning it right, avoiding any sort of barriers to communication, barriers to learning. Now, next on our list here is intensity, okay? That means what is intense and vivid is going to be learned better, all right? Immediate, exciting, or dramatic learning connected to a real situation is intensity. So what's more intense? Talking about how when you pull back on the yoke, the airplane's going to get slow and you're going to hear the stall horn, or actually going out and doing it. Obviously, going out and doing it in the airplane is more intense. What would be a happy medium if you couldn't do it in the airplane? Well, maybe doing it in a simulator. Okay, so simulators are a great way to make things more intense. You could just sit here and talk to the student about something. You could talk to them and get up and draw something on the board and use a little model airplane. That's a little bit more vivid and intense. Then you could get into a simulator, and then you could actually get into the real airplane. The more intense and vivid you make something, the better they will learn. And that's why this is a great thing you're doing, listening to these podcast episodes here about the PTS, but it's not as intense as us actually doing it in video format or giving you some sort of visual aids to help all this stuff sink in. But it is valuable nonetheless. But what would make it even better is maybe some video format stuff. What would make it even better than that is actually sitting you down with a student, having you teach a lesson on steep turns, and then critiquing how you teach it and applying all the things we're talking about here in the PTS, in the FOI section of the PTS, to that actual lesson you just did. That would probably be the most intense or most vivid way to convey this information to you. Now, last one, the R in Reaper is going to be recency. That says things learned most recently are best remembered. So obviously, you can remember what you had for breakfast this morning. Can you remember what you had for breakfast 3 weeks ago? Probably not. Now, that's totally okay. Just means things fade, right? So you want that student showing up for flight lessons on a semi-regular basis because things are going to fade. And if they haven't, you know, learned it in the past month or two, they probably will forget it. So if you're preparing somebody for a check ride and they've been in flight training for 6-8 months, what they did 6-8 months ago, they've probably forgotten most of it. You know, they may still have something, but 89% of it might be gone. So recency is important. That is Reaper. That is the laws of learning. Okay. R-E-E-P-I-R, readiness, effect, exercise, primacy, intensity, and recency, Reaper. Now, number 5 on our list here is going to be the domains of learning, all right? So this is the next topic within Task B, the learning process, in the FOI section of the PTS. Domains of learning. There are a few different domains, okay? The domains of learning we have are cognitive, affective, and psychomotor. Now, cognitive means thinking, affective means feeling, psychomotor means doing. Let's give some examples here. Cognitive thinking, rote, understanding, application, correlation. Okay, and we're going to talk about that here more in a second because those are the levels of learning. RUAC is the acronym we like to use there, R-U-A-C, RUAC. Now, affective, feeling, emotions, values, enthusiasms, motivations, attitudes, awareness, response, those different things. All right, so the affective domain of learning is going to be how somebody feels. Psychomotor domain of learning is going to be doing. All right, so the actual act of getting out there, the kinesthetic aspect of learning, right? So actually getting out there and doing the practice, the actual practicing of steep turns, practicing stalls, the actual technique, those sorts of things, all right? Psychomotor, things you can touch, do, and feel. Kinesthetic, right? Affective is the feelings and emotions that go along with how somebody learns and how they feel about an overall subject. You know, stalls are scary and steep turns are fun, whatever it might be, the overall feeling they have. And then cognitive is the thinking aspect. And we're going to talk more about this here. RUAC is the acronym we use for the cognitive domain of learning. And that tells us the different levels of learning out there, okay? Rote, understanding, application, correlation. That is RUAC, all right? Rote just means they can read something back to you, all right? So what would be a rote memorization thing? Well, you know, when you get slow in the airplane, the stall horn comes on, it goes beep. And they just repeat that sentence back to you. Okay, so airplane gets slow, stall horn goes beep. I gotcha. They have no idea what you're talking about. The understanding level would be they could describe, estimate, and explain. They can put concepts together so they can say, oh, you know, airspeed's decreasing? Well, if airspeed's decreasing and we're pulling back on the yoke, we're probably increasing our angle of attack, and that is when the stall warning will come on and go beep. So now they can kind of understand what that sentence really means. Now, application, the verbs we use with this would be determine, develop, solve. So determine when the stall warning is going to come on. Well, and they could say, oh, the stall warning could come on when you're turning base to final and you're pulling too hard and you're increasing the angle of attack too much and your airspeed's bleeding off, maybe you are flying too slow, plus the increased load factor in the base to final turn is going to activate the stall warning horn. Okay, cool. That sounds good to me. That's a nice application of it. Correlation would be the analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. The HOTS are associated with correlation, all right? Higher order thinking skills. This comes from the scenario-based training. And you ask the student a question like, oh, gee, you know, it's a gusty day. You're turning base to final. What would you be worried about? Especially if you got if you turn left base to final and you got a left crosswind, you'd say, oh, I might overshoot final. And overshooting final, I might turn and bank too much and pull too hard. And I could possibly increase the angle of attack and stall the airplane. I'd hear the stall warning. And in that case, I would go ahead and push forward, reduce my angle of attack to make the airplane fly again. That's a nice correlation level. And those are those higher order thinking skills going into play. A way that I would quickly explain this is rote. You tell them, hey, you exceed the critical angle of attack, stall horn goes beep. And they say, okay, when I get to a high angle of attack, stall horn goes beep. Got it. Understanding level is the stall horn goes beep because the nose is coming up and our angle of attack is increasing. We're getting slow, whatever it might be. And that's what sets off the stall warning is when the airflow starts to separate from the wing or gets close to that point, high angle of attack. That's what sets off the stall warning. I understand that. Cool. The application level would be they go out there, they pull back, you know, on the yoke up at 3,000 feet, they're practicing stalls. The stall horn comes on and they go, oh, stall horn on. I need to push forward or relax the back pressure. They do that. That's the application level of that bit of knowledge. And then the correlation level would be, you know, after that lesson, they've done a few other things. They did some steep turns. They did some slow flight. All good. Coming back in the traffic pattern, they turn left downwind, left base, and base to final. They are pulling it around, they overshoot base final, and they pull back a little hard, they get a stall warning, and they immediately relax the back pressure. Now they've correlated that bit of knowledge to another phase of flight. So they have that higher order thinking skill associated to keep them safe in a situation where they go, oh, stall warning going off, I'm banking, I'm pulling, I've got load factored, let me decrease my load, let me decrease my angle of attack here. So, RUAC. Rote, understanding, application, correlation. That is the cognitive domain of learning. The three domains of learning, cognitive, affective, psychomotor. Cognitive is thinking, affective is feeling, psychomotor is doing, all right? Now, that brings us to number six on our list for task B. Number six is the characteristics of learning. This one's pretty straightforward, all right? Learning is purposeful. Learning is a result of experience. Learning is multifaceted. Learning is an active process. How do I explain each of these in a nice, quick, succinct way? Well, learning is purposeful. It needs to have a purpose. It needs to make sense. You can't just say, we're going to learn this because the FAA says so. You have to say, we're going to learn this because this is going to help you achieve your goal of becoming a flight instructor, and we need to know this for the written exam as well as the oral exam and perhaps even teaching your students. So there's a purpose behind what we're doing. We're not just doing something useless, all right? We're doing something purposeful. Now, learning is a result of experience. Okay, that means they need to experience something. They need to experience you talking to them. They need to experience something in the airplane. Learning is a result of experience, and most people learn from experiences, right? How many of us have stuck the fork in the electrical outlet when we were young? Well, we don't do that anymore now, do we? Because we experienced that it is very jolting, and we don't do that. So we don't also put our hands on hot stoves because we experienced when we were a kid that when our mom was saying, oh, that's hot, and you went, what's hot? Ow, that's what hot is. That hurts. That's a result of experience. We no longer touch hot stoves. Hopefully, if you're a normal functioning human being, hopefully you don't do that anymore. Now, learning is also multifaceted. What does that mean? Well, it comes in different ways, all right? You have to hit different perceptions for all these different people you're going to be teaching. One size does not fit all. Some people are KVA, some people are AVK. What does that mean? Kinesthetic, visual, auditory, or auditory, visual, kinesthetic, or maybe they're auditory, kinesthetic, visual. You know, that's the order in which they learn or what they most rely on. I know for me personally, I'm a kinesthetic person. I like to touch and do things. Then I like to see things, visual, video, right? I love videos. And then auditory, man, if you talk to me, it goes in one ear and out the other. I can't hear anything you're saying, all right? So for me, kinesthetic's most important, then visual. And auditory, man, it was tough for me to even get through check rides and listen to an examiner ask a question. I'd forget the question by the time they ended with the question, because I just don't listen that well. I never did going through school. That's why I'm a pilot. Couldn't hack an engineering school. Lastly, learning is an active process, okay? So an active process, that means the person needs to be engaged. The worst thing would be if your student's asleep, they're not going to learn much from you, right? So if you're doing a ground session and they're nodding off and falling asleep, they're learning nothing. Learning is an active process. Instead of standing up there on the board and drawing a bunch of stuff and talking at them while they nod off and daydream, perhaps you ought to hand the marker to them, make them stand up and get engaged in the actual process of them learning. Have them draw something out for you after you draw it out for them, or vice versa. Try to get them actively participating. So the characteristics of learning, the four characteristics are: learning is purposeful, learning is a result of experience, learning is multifaceted, learning is an active process. Now, number seven here on the learning process in task B of the CFI PTS is acquiring skill and knowledge, all right? So how do we acquire skill and knowledge? Well, there's three stages. They're going to be cognitive, associative, and automaticity, however you like to say that word. Basically means automatic, right? So cognitive is factual knowledge, introduction to a skill at the basic level. That's the cognitive part of this. Now, associative is practice, ability to assess and progress and make adjustments, right? So somebody does a steep turn, they lose 100 feet, they can practice this, they can assess their progress and say, I lost some altitude, next time I'm gonna have to pull back a little harder to maintain altitude. That's the associative part. And then automaticity is when procedures become automatic, requiring less attention to individual steps. All right, so at first, somebody's really focusing on a beam the numbers, carburetor heat, reduce power, 10 degrees of flaps, good. Hold altitude, slow down, let the nose come down, we start descending, good. And then, you know, hours into it, they're just doing it automatically. They're not thinking about reaching for the carb heat knob. They're not thinking about looking at the tachometer and how much they need to produce that power. They know just by pulling it out an inch or so is going to give them about 1700 RPM or whatever they're targeting. They know where the flap handle is. They don't have to look for it. They just reach over and tap it once, comes down, it hits 10 degrees, all good. So that is automaticity when procedures become automatic, requiring less attention to individual steps. The three stages of acquiring skill and knowledge, to recap them, are cognitive, associative, and automaticity. All right, cognitive is that factual knowledge. Associative is practicing it and making small adjustments. Automaticity is when things become automatic and require less attention to individual steps. Now, that brings us to the next section of task B, number eight, that is types of practice. What types of practice do we have in the learning process? Well, the types of practice are going to be deliberate, blocked, or random, okay? Deliberate is a particular goal which practices specific areas and receives specific feedback, okay? Blocked would be a specific drill practice until movement becomes automatic, and random is performing a series of separate skills in random order, okay? So what would random be? Oh, well, let's do a steep turn followed by a slow flight followed by a 30 degree bank turn followed by climbing left 360, whatever it might be. Random is performing a series of separate skills in random order. Next, we have blocked, right? So blocked is a specific drill practice until movement becomes automatic. All right, give me a steep turn to the left. Give me another steep turn to the left. Give me another steep turn to the left. You know, just keep practicing over and over and over again, maybe critiquing between each one. But blocked practice only works for so long. You can only do that for so long until it's just awful and you need to take a break from it, all right? Random can be good to keep things interesting, keep their mind moving around. Random's kind of nice. Deliberate's probably the best thing, right? So we set out a particular goal, and we practice a specific set of tasks or practice in a specific area, and we give specific feedback, all right? So deliberate's kind of a nice way to go about it. That would be a typical lesson plan. We have an objective, you know, completion standards. That's a particular goal. And we're going to go out and practice slow flight, power off and power on stalls today, and we're going to give you feedback on each one. That's deliberate practice. That's probably the best way to go about it. So three types of practice: deliberate, blocked, and random. Deliberate is your typical lesson plan. You have a particular goal. Blocked is same thing over and over and over again. Random is just mixing it all up. This brings us to number 9 on our list in the learning process, scenario-based training. All right, so what is scenario-based training? We've all heard this fancy term thrown around, SBT, scenario-based training. Well, this is going to be what we ultimately want to do with our students to help them develop those higher order thinking skills and improve their aeronautical decision-making skills, really foster the development of ADM in our students. How do we conduct scenario-based training? Well, we want to devise scenarios that allow students to use their knowledge and skill to solve realistic problems and make decisions, all right? So any scenario you come up with needs to be short and realistic, all right? It can't be 20 or 30 minutes long, and it can't be just crazy out of the box. What happens when you're flying upside down in a multi-engine airplane on Tuesday and the president's your passenger? It's not realistic, okay? We need a realistic scenario. You take off of a 2,500-foot long strip, and as you rotate, the engine starts running rough. What do you do right at the moment you rotate and you feel that roughness in the engine? That would be a good scenario to start developing some skills. That's a very basic scenario, very, very basic. But ultimately, when we develop these scenarios for SBT, for scenario-based training for our students, we want to make sure there's a clear objective, it's tailored to the needs of the student and where they're at in their training, and it capitalizes on the nuances of the local environment, right? So scenarios about thunderstorms in Florida are great. Scenarios about mountain wave turbulence in Colorado are great. But scenarios about mountain wave turbulence in Florida, not so much. Not a lot in the way of mountains there. Lots of condo complexes. Might catch some turbulence off those things, but you shouldn't be flying close enough to them anyways to catch rotors off condo complexes. But those are three parts of scenario-based training. Clear objective, needs to be tailored to the needs of the student, and needs to capitalize on the nuances of the local environment. SBT, scenario-based training. Now everyone makes errors. That is number 10 on our list here. I know this is a long one. We are getting through task B here. We are on number 10, errors. We are moving right along here, guys. It'll be over here soon, I promise. Now, errors, the FAA has identified two different types of errors you can make, all right? There are slips and mistakes. What are the difference between a slip and a mistake? Well, a slip is when you plan to do something, but you do something else. A mistake is when you plan to do the wrong thing and you're successful. So slips are errors of action, mistakes are errors of thought. You can say, what's the point of all this? This is silly. Well, it might be, but you need to know this for the FOI, and this is part of the PTS, so we're going over it. So two different types of errors, slip or mistake. What's a slip? You plan to do something, but you do something else. You plan to flare, but instead you push forward. That's bad. That's an error of action. What's a mistake? Well, you plan to do the wrong thing and you're successful. So you think that right as you come in over the threshold, it's important to pull the yoke all the way aft. And you do that and you pull the yoke all the way aft and the nose pitches up and you balloon. And that's just, you know, an error of thought. That's you thinking that you know how to do something and you're entirely, totally wrong. That's classified as a mistake. Either way, it's an error. And most important here is how do we mitigate errors? Well, learning and practice. Taking your time, checking for errors, using reminders, developing routines, raising your situational awareness, and making sure you have recovery error techniques in place. You know, if you've learned how to recover from errors, like you've learned stall recovery, for example, that is going to help you mitigate all those things. So, two types of errors, slips or mistake. A slip is you plan to do something, but you do something else. A mistake is you plan to do the wrong thing and you're successful. Slip is an error of action, and a mistake is an error of thought. All right, number 11, almost done here, guys. Memory and forgetting, all right? So memory and forgetting is number 11 in the learning process. Memory is what we use to encode, store, and retrieve information, all right? Now, we have a couple different parts of our memory. We have sensory, short-term, and long-term, okay? How does this all tie into forgetting things? Well, sensory is the initial processing of stimuli, and we discard and retain what's relevant within a few seconds. So it's pre-coding. So we take in stimuli and we code it, and we either say this is relevant or this is useless. And that's determined within a few brief seconds. Now, short-term memory is information stored for roughly 30 seconds, all right? Now, the kicker here is that there's a limitation to short-term memory, and that is it takes about 5 to 10 seconds to properly code information, and if the coding process is interrupted at all, then that information is easily lost since it's only being stored for 30 seconds. So you need to as you take in information, have a good study environment, a good teaching environment, a good quiet area without interruptions and nothing that's going to interrupt that short-term memory process so that it can eventually be moved into long-term memory. Because you got that 30-second window, and if you have an interruption in there, the brain may not properly code the information in the student's mind to store it for longer. Now, there's a couple of different steps to help retention with short-term memory. These would include rehearsal or repetition of the information and sorting or categorization into systematic chunks, all right? So you want to break up information into systematic chunks. That's why we try to speak a certain way when we record these episodes here. We try to make things bullet-pointed for you to be able to remember this, making it chunked so that it can get into the short-term memory, get properly coded without distractions, with your Bose noise-canceling headphones on, so you can listen to this nice and quietly in silence, code it in your short-term memory, move it to your long-term memory, and access this on the day of your check ride. And if all that works out properly, then things will move into long-term memory, and long-term memory is permanent storage for unlimited amount of info. Isn't that awesome? We can store an unlimited amount of information in our brains, at least as far as we're concerned. If we can store all that stuff into long-term memory, that's where we process, store, and recall things. Now, the training must be relevant and meaningful to be stored in the long-term memory, right? It's got to make it through that first barrier of sensory, can't get discarded, and it's got to be coded as something relevant, and then it's got to stick through us with the short-term memory. It's got to get coded properly again before it can eventually be moved into long-term memory and stored permanently. Where, yes, things fade and things go away and you might forget some things, but it's always there and it can always be reaccessed. And things like practice and repetition help make it more accessible, especially when it's stored in bullet points or systematic chunks. That's why we try to talk in bullet points here to store it so it's more easily accessible compared to just one big long run-on sentence. Now, that is memory and forgetting, okay? That's how things would fall out of our memory if they don't make it through the sensory short-term all the way into the long-term stage. Sensory, initial, just the first few seconds. Short-term, 30 seconds. Long-term, forever. Now, number 12, retention of learning. How can we retain what we learn? Okay, number 12 in task B of the learning process. Retention of learning. We can give praise that will help stimulate learning, stimulate retention. All right, so praise stimulates remembering. Recall is also promoted by association. That's another one there. So we can recall things easier if we can associate them with other things. Remember, it's our job to help foster those perceptions into insights. We want to combine perceptions into meaningful wholes, and the more we can tie things together and relate information from lesson 1 to lesson 13 to lesson 22 to lesson 5 and so on, the more we can relate information, and even outside of aviation, relate the information with the airplane to a car, to a boat, to whatever, the more we can relate information and interconnect that web, that will help promote recall. Recall is promoted by association. Now, the next one here is going to be favorable attitudes aid retention, all right? So if you have a favorable attitude, it will help the student aid retention. Isn't it pleasant to learn from a teacher in school who has a good attitude? Wasn't that always fun to go to their class? Didn't you feel like you learned a lot in it? Maybe just their attitude was part of that. Favorable attitudes aid retention. Learning with all the senses is also most effective, okay? That's why actually getting out there and doing things is probably the best, because you'll hear, see, touch, smell, taste, all of those things, okay? So learning with all the senses is most effective. That makes it much more vivid and intense, like we were talking about in the laws of learning with Reaper before. Now, the next one here is going to be meaningful repetition aids recall, okay? Meaningful repetition. That doesn't mean you want to go home and write out Reaper 1,000 times. Write it out maybe 10 times, and you'll probably remember what Reaper stands for then. Meaningful repetition aids recall. Just repeating Reaper, 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 Reaper will not help you at all. But if you make it meaningful and write out the word Reaper and then write out what each letter stands for and do that 10 or 15 times, I bet you you'll be able to recall it very easily then. The last thing that helps aid the retention of learning is going to be mnemonics and acronyms, right? Tomato flames, COIL, Reaper, all of those things are great. Mnemonics, like trying to remember the different planets, right? My very dear Aunt Sally just sat upon 9 pizzas, something like that, to help us remember the planets in order in our solar system. So mnemonics and acronyms are great. You can either invent your own or use ones that already exist out there. There's lots that already exist out there in aviation. Now, not all of them are great. Tomato Flames, I think, is a silly one because why on earth do I want to remember all that stuff when I could just remember 91.205 and look it up there? It's a lot easier. Trying to spend time remembering Tomato Flames may not be purposeful and it may not be meaningful to try to do that, right? So we want to make sure what we're doing is purposeful. That's one of the things we talked about previously in this audio episode. So either way, last part, mnemonics and acronyms aid the retention of learning. To recap that, praise stimulates remembering. Recall is promoted by association. Favorable attitudes aid retention. Remember to smile. Learning with all the senses is most effective. Get yourself active and make the lesson vivid. Meaningful repetition aids recall. And mnemonics and acronyms help the retention of learning. All right, number 13, we are here, guys. This is the very end of the learning process, task B in the CFI PTS, Area of Operation 1, the Fundamentals of Instruction. All right, number 13, transfer of learning. How do we transfer learning? This is going to be the ability to apply knowledge or procedures learned to new contexts. You should, as the instructor, plan for transfer of learning as the primary objective, all right? That is your primary objective, is to transfer learning. You need to prepare students to apply knowledge to other situations. So trying to get those higher order thinking skills going, getting that correlation level of knowledge going, prepare your students to apply knowledge they're learning to other situations. SBT, scenario-based training, is awesome for that one. Maintain high order learning standards. Okay, so always trying to get them to think critically, those critical thinking skills, not just rote memorization, get those critical thinking skills working. Scenarios are great for that too. Provide meaningful learning experiences. Okay, don't just get up and recite some boring lesson plan. Provide a meaningful learning experience. Make it active. Do use all those things we just talked about in this whole audio episode. Get up, use an instructional aid, get the student up, make them draw things on the board. Make it interactive, make it vivid, make it intense. All right. Provide meaningful learning experiences. And lastly, use instructional material to make relationships clear. So use your instructional material to make the relationships between lessons 1 and 3 and 17 and 22 and 12 and 10 all clear. Make it all tie together. Tie these things together. Remember that recall is promoted by association. We want to associate as many things as possible. We want to group all those perceptions together to make useful, meaningful holes, insights for our students. That is the transfer of learning. That is task B of the CFI PTS, the learning process. Do not be discouraged, guys. I know that was a long one. It is going to get easier as we go, especially once we get out of the fundamentals of instruction, I promise. Remember that the purpose of these episodes is not for you to remember exactly what I'm explaining. It's for you to get just enough to be able to moderately talk somewhat intelligently about all of these line items here and be able to reference back in the Flight Instructor's Handbook, FAA H8083-9, be able to reference back to that book and learn a little bit more about them or explain more on the check right if they ask for it. Ultimately, stick to the high points, what we're talking about, like the acronyms, COIL, REAPER, RUAC. Those things are the high points. Stick with those. Be able to say just a few words about each of these line items within the PTS.